I'm going to quickly go through the top 10 reasons to work for the federal government, and then I'm going to go into some more specifics on job searches, resumes, and how to make it in this world. So, first reason, in order of sort of like a Letterman backwards list, it's the original family-friendly workplace. We have many things available for families, flexible work schedules. We have extensive protections, legal protections, and job security. We have great health insurance and other benefits, and I'm living proof of that. We have superb retirement benefits. I'm eligible to retire today. I've actually collected enough money and penalties in my government career I could work another 167 years and my salary is paid for, but I'm only going to work a few more years. But I could retire on superb retirement benefits, and these days may not be important to each and every one of you, but someday it will. We have regular pay raises and equitable pay scales in the government. No employee of EPA makes over $200,000, so for those of you who are looking for a big payday, you're not going to find it in the federal government. But we have a lot of equity. We don't have any executives or CEOs making $50 million and $10 million bonuses, and that creates a workplace that promotes fairness and camaraderie. The ability to advance is there. People who work hard advance on the career ladder very quickly. We don't plan on going out of business anytime soon, although I understand some pundits say the government may shut down next winter sometime if we don't have a budget. We've lived through it before. There's a chance to do interesting work. I've worked all over the United States, all over the world. The work is always very interesting. There is an opportunity to transfer and expand horizons. My colleague here, Dana Stotsky, who's not just my driver but a lawyer from our Denver, Colorado office, has been working in my office all summer, helping to enrich his government career. And then finally, there's a sense of public service. And having a reason to get up in the morning is very important. Now, if you'll go to those other slides, I want to start in on this handout, jobs, jobs, jobs. I can't make it any more clear than it is already. But, and I hope you all have this, this two-page document, please read it. Tuck it away, look at it again in 2 weeks, because I have tried to distill the work of 35 years since I got out of law school. And when I got out of school, well, President Carter was the president. Many of you were probably not even alive when he was president, but he was the last Democratic president before President Clinton. There was a national recession, not this temporary downturn that we're experiencing now. There was an oil embargo. Interest rates on home mortgages reached 17%. You had to wait in line to buy gas. There were hostages in the Middle East. There was a war in the Middle East. I mean, some things never change. But there was a government-wide, federal government-wide hiring freeze at the time, and the only place I wanted to work was EPA. So I had to reassess, even back then, what I was about to do with my career. And the way you do that is thinking very broadly. If you're thinking that the only place you can work, and I'm assuming most of you are here because you want to do environmental work, but if you think the only place you can work is the EPA or the Justice Department or the Natural Resources Defense Council, think again, think more broadly. The job market may seem very tight, and certain aspects of it are, in fact, very tight. The need for environmental work, environmental counseling, is still great in many, many aspects of the society. So you have to think broadly. What am I interested in? Who's doing that work? How can I get my resume in front of that individual? Now, a couple of points. First, network. You're not working if you're not networking. And when I talk about networking, and when I talk about making finding a job your job, my advice, and how many of you are first-year students? All right, well, you're not supposed to do this, okay? But after December 1st, when you can start looking for a job, you need to spend 2 to 4 hours a week looking for a job. Those of you who are second and third year students, you should be doing that every week, 2 to 4 hours a week. What do I mean by looking for a job? I don't mean reading the paper, Legal Times, USA Jobs, or any job sites like that. But you need to be looking for work. Put the next slide up, would you please? Yes, okay. You're not working unless you're networking. Have you contracted prior employers, supervisors, and mentors to get some ideas? Have you done this? Have you thanked already the people that you worked for last summer? How many have sent a thank you note to people you've worked for last summer? Raise your hand. Were you unemployed? All right, well, who'd you work for last summer?
I had a real job.
All right, well, have you been in touch with them? And let me tell you why this is important. I had a guy in my office a couple of years ago. Now, he went to William and Mary, and he was in my office crying the blues. He couldn't find a job. He was working for us as a law clerk after he graduated. And he said to me, I can't find a job. And by the way, he said, Washington and Lee is rated higher than William and Mary. And I said, they are? I mean, I don't pay that close attention to who's rated ahead of anybody else. But he said, you know, how can I, a William and Mary person, get a job? Washington and Lee has a higher academic rating or law school ranking or something like that. And I said, well, let's talk about this for a moment. What's your plan for finding a job? And he said, well, every morning I get up, I look in the Washington Post for any legal jobs that might be available. Well, you and 10,000 other people, then he went on USA Jobs, which is a federal clearinghouse for jobs. But would it surprise you to know that many federal jobs, and I mean law clerk and permanent employee jobs, never on USA Jobs? They don't have to be. Lawyers in the federal service are considered accepted service. And that means we didn't take a test to get the job. We were hired because of our status. We were lawyers. That meant we were qualified for a position, and if somebody liked our background, resume, or other subjective or objective factors, we could be hired. We don't have to take a test and be rated against other candidates. Well, these jobs don't have to be advertised. So if you're interested in federal service, you have to find some way to get your resume in front of someone who's in a position to hire you. So I said to this guy, what have you done in terms of looking for a job? Well, the Post, the Legal Times, USA Jobs. And I said, well, here's what I want you to do. In the next 2 days, I want you to send an email to everybody you worked for in the last 7 years, including, what did you call it, a real job?
Yeah, I worked a lot for 2 years.
Paralegal? Well, let's come right down. If I could hire only paralegals who are in law school, that's what I would do. And why is that? Paralegal knows how to do a lot of stuff that they don't teach you here. How to assemble a file. How to keep your mouth shut. How to listen. Paralegals, all the fight's been taken out of you, right? Paralegal, lowest of the low in the entire firm, right? Lower than even the secretaries, right? Yeah. Well, maybe you weren't that low. Maybe you still have some fight. But I like people who've been a paralegal. I think it's good preparation to be a lawyer. Well, this guy I'm talking about, first he argues a little bit with me. And, you know, one thing that's important to learn is humility and how to listen to people, because occasionally even I have something worthwhile to say. And I said, I want you to send an email to everybody you worked for in the past 7 years, and that included college jobs. Well, where am I going to find the email? How am I going to get this information? I mean, this is something that people should be keeping up to date all the time. Your former supervisors, people who are going to have to certify your bar application somewhere down the road. So he digs up this information, and he sends out these emails, and within an hour, and I reviewed his email, it was, I am working for the EPA part-time. I'm in Washington, D.C. I graduated from law school. I'm waiting for bar admissions. I'm looking for work. If you have any suggestions, would you please let me know? He sends this email out. Within 1 hour, he gets a response back from a lady he worked for as a sophomore in college. He had worked one summer for the Federal Communications Commission. And what he did was he delivered stuff. He went on errands. He was sort of like Dana is when we're on travel. He opens a door, closes the door, brings the car around. You know, ministerial stuff. But he worked for a lady at the FCC who was sort of, you know, every institution has a person like this. They know where all the keys are. They know how to open doors. They know where materials are, supplies. They're well regarded in the institution, and he worked for her. So she writes him an email response, "Dear Joseph, I am so proud of you." She's proud of him. He did the law school work, right? She's proud of him. "When you worked for me as a sophomore in college, you said, my dream is to go to law school someday, and you did it." He had no contact with her for 5.5 years. But she said, "You did it. I am so proud of you. Would you mind if I took your resume upstairs and gave it to the people who I understand are looking for 3 entry-level attorneys in some FCC office that was, I don't even know what they do, bundle interstate phone rates or some communications thing." She takes his resume up there, she, a beloved figure in the office, and says, "I recommend you look at him very closely." He's hired within a day. Why? Because he wrote to somebody he worked for. He had a good working relationship. He left on good terms. And for some reason, many human beings still have this gene, this sense of, let me help you, let me take care of you. Now, for all we know, maybe he was the guy her daughter should have married. Maybe he was the guy that should have taken her to the prom. Who knows what was in her mind? But she felt very protective and helped him. And he is still at the Federal Communication Commission to this day. And that's how he got it. So you have to be networking. You're not working if you're not networking. Now, what about your resume? And take a look at this other handout for a moment, marked resumes. What does your resume say about you? Does it suggest achievement, excellence? Is it letter perfect? And let me tell you, I looked at last year for our summer law clerk program well over 2,000 resumes. And some of them stuck out very prominently. And if you'll turn the page over, marked resumes, let me just call to your attention just a couple of cover letters that came in from candidates. Number one, these are clipped right off the email or right off their letters. "I'm a second-year student interested in environmental." Now, right away, it shows a lack of something, maybe command of the English language, maybe proofreading ability, and the person is enthralled with the prospect of working for us. Well, enthralled, that's not a proper word either. I mean, enthralled is, you know, you're at the Grand Canyon and you see a rainbow. Number two, look at this. John Doe, place of employment, city, state. "Dear Mr. Joe, such and such recommended I contact you regarding a summer internship." And he put an EPA person's name in there and had a nice letter, but look who it was addressed to. "My name is not John Doe, Anytown, USA." Again, lack of attention to detail. And what are we looking for when we hire people? Judgment, attention to detail. The next person, "I'm a second-year student interested in working as an intern. Working with you would be the best opportunity for me to interact with some of the best lawyers in the field." I mean, I don't mind being flattered. And if people will tell you flattery will get you nowhere, they've never been flattered. Because flattery does go a long way. But this is too much. The range of issues make it an optimal spot You know, this is too much. Number four, dear Mr. Walker. Today, by the way, I got an email from a student at a top school in New York State. Hi. Number four, please keep me in mind. I hope to hear from you soon. Too small. The next one, number five, have you filled your paralegal positions yet? Look what's in parentheses. I have changed my kick a pigeon. First time he writes to me, his email is kickapigeon@suchandsuch.com. I immediately write back, dear Mr. X, I have taught natural resource law in a number of national law schools, and I realize that pigeons, and I have the Latin name, are invasive species not entitled to protection of the Endangered Species Act. However, they are sentient beings, and when writing to a natural resource office or a place like EPA, it's probably not a good idea to use a term like kick a pigeon or Little Miss Muffet. I got one this year from Little Miss Muffin. Little Miss Muffin. And on her resume, she has a muffin stand in the lobby of the law school, and she peddles organic or high fiber or some kind of muffins. No. After he got my email back, he wrote and he said, I really don't kick pigeons. It's a very funny story, and you'll enjoy hearing about it when we meet. Well, we never met, because I'm looking for judgment, and where I have resumes to look at, if I can find a reason, serious typos, errors in judgment, that's it for you. So you have to be very careful about what's in your email, what's in your cover letter, what's in your resume. Now the last one, number six, and this is just a handful. I have a keen interest in practicing environmental and energy law in both the public and private sectors. I mean, if you're writing energy, write an energy cover letter or write a public, and don't, you know, one size does not fit all necessarily. And then he says, I think your office would be an excellent launching pad. I mean, that's NASA talk. That's not EPA talk. And then finally, my experience from last summer marked by lasting contributions to the office. I mean, he's a first-year student, but he's made lasting contributions to the office, and he's had a slim learning curve. Well, we'll see about that. He has a dedicated work ethic. Who doesn't? A driving passion for solving the environmental problems confronting our country today. Aye. I require very little in the way of accommodation, perhaps only a flat surface for my laptop and maybe a chair. Go, turn it over again. Resumes. Work on your resume. Have someone look at it. Have career services look at it. Have other people look at it and make sure that it clarifies exactly what it is you want it to say. You should not be having your high school on your resume. Even you little firsties can take that off. No high school, even if you went to Exeter Academy or Phillips, and leave that off. If you were yearbook chairman for the high school, leave that off. That's not writing. That's a yearbook. What if you don't have a lot of experience so far? Well, then you can start listing relevant courses in your undergraduate degree, but leave out things that are going to confuse, alarm, insult, inflame. Relevant job experience is important. I've received dozens of resumes from people who claim that Starbucks experience started as a counterman, within 2 weeks promoted to barista, exclamation point, responsible for inventory, closing out, reconciling cash register. Critical issues. Do not raise questions, inflame, or insult. I have gotten a resume, dozens. I'll just talk about one. The person puts on the resume, personal interests, kickboxing, weightlifting, The Sopranos. Now, some people might be offended by The Sopranos. you have to be careful. Kickboxing, judo, things like that. I mean, if you're going legal aid in a poor area, those might be good skills to help protect the office. But try to accentuate the positives and not some of these. Be accurate and truthful. Every year, I find exaggerations in resumes. And if you can't back it up, you're off the table. Because one of the things, ultimately, I'm going to have to certify. Hello. If I say anything you disagree with, pipe up, all right? But I have to certify bar applications for people as to their truthfulness, accuracy, loyalty. And if we've had issues like this, they don't go very well. I interviewed a woman at a law school 2 winters ago, and she had a beautiful, meaty, fat paragraph about her internship at a big county prosecutor's office in New York. And I started asking questions about it. This was the end of February, and the job was listed January 2nd to present. So I said, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And then she kind of tilted her head down, and she said, well, actually, I haven't started there yet. I said, you haven't started there yet? Well, after Christmas break, I had mono, and I couldn't work for 2 weeks, and then my mentor at the office was in Belize, and then she got, you know, some ailment, and so it's just been a comedy of errors to this point, and in fact, I haven't done any work there. Well, why is it on your resume? I mean, this is why I'm asking you. You're asserting you have these skills that you've done. You know, it was like researched and wrote memoranda briefs. That was it for her. Be concise. Don't be too wordy. People who submit resumes with quarter-inch margins almost always are cast aside by me. There's no legal pleading. You don't have any legal pleadings at DOJ with quarter-inch margins, do you? You know, you think this is a small issue, and the reason people have the quarter-inch margins is they want to jam so much on there. But as Justice Scalia said, more can be less, so don't overload it. Be letter perfect, and that's so critical, too. We rely on word perfect and word and spell check, but even that can make errors. For interviews, I recommend, and I'm meeting with some of you later today, so pay attention to this. What I recommend is that you come to the interview. Here's a clean copy of my resume. Here's my references. Right on the table, not furnished on request, because you'll send it to me 2 weeks later. You know, they'll never meet up again. Here's my writing sample, and it better be short, sweet, and nice. And then, by the way, I was an orphan, and I lived like Oliver Twist in London, and I had to put myself through preschool, high school, college, law school. So I've been working as a barista at Starbucks. That's fine on another piece of paper, not fine on the resume. All right, let me go back to this first handout again. And let me call your attention to a couple of things up here. Look broadly at the field you're interested in. Look broadly at the field you're interested in. Where are we going to find work like this? Well, I'm going to run through a few things that are also on your handout. First of all, citizen and public interest groups. Washington, D.C., New York, some of the other big cities, state capitals, often are the home of many public interest groups. How do you find out public interest groups? The Encyclopedia of Associations. If you don't have it in the law library here or in career services, find out why they don't have it. The Encyclopedia has thousands, over 135,000 nonprofit membership organizations worldwide that you can apply to. Let me give you an example. I have a young lady who worked for me as a law clerk in the fall and spring from a local D.C. school, having a hard time finding a job a couple years ago, so we started talking nonprofit. There's nothing wrong with nonprofit work, and it's often a good... Where's that? Weren't you in the nonprofit world for a while? Satisfying. Not so lucrative, but it can be very satisfying. Well, where do you find out about these nonprofits? the Encyclopedia of Associations. I say to her, what are you interested in? Because again, figuring out what you're interested in, I'm interested in environmental and energy, you know, on the public and private side. Figuring out what you're interested in is a big start. Well, she said to me, I'm interested in environmental justice. And I said, all right. Are you a member of any groups that do environmental justice? And she said, well, I've been a member of the NAACP since I was 12. And I said, well, what do you think they're doing about environmental justice? I don't know. She goes on the website, they're doing nothing. So she goes up to Baltimore, and she talks to the head of the NAACP at the time, and he goes, you know, why aren't we doing something about environmental justice? Thank you for bringing this to my attention. And he hired her on the spot 25 hours a week, foot in the door, to develop an environmental justice program for the NAACP. If you're talking about environmental justice, poor people, disproportionate minority people, who else to be an advocate than the NAACP? And now if you go on their website, they have a whole section on climate change and how it could be affecting poor people, Louisiana, Gulf Coast, and other areas. And she started it where they had never had anything. So public interest groups, not just EDF or NRDC, you know, they're busy enough suing us, right? And we don't mind. We don't mind. If a chihuahua bites our heel, so what? All right, this is a DOJ lady over here, by the way. So welcome. Now, so Google practice areas that you're interested in. If you're interested in marine mammal protection, for example, would you write to the SEC or HUD? No. Who does marine mammal protection? You Google that. It's the Department of Commerce, Marine Mammal Protection Office. It's DOJ may have some involvement. It's Fish and Wildlife Service. It's the Navy, which has a big marine mammal effort when they blow up bombs and upset the whales and the dolphins. They have a whole program looking at that. They're doing EISs all the time. Then you have the NGOs, the animal, the PETA people. There's a lot of people involved in marine mammals, but they're not necessarily going to be holding jobs open. You have to go out and look for work like this. So, encyclopedia, good. Next. Go back one, would you? All right, go to the next one. Government agencies and departments. Government agency. When I got out of law school, when Carter, what president did you start under? Probably Clinton.
I graduated from law school in 86.
86, baby. All right.
I started private practice.
All right. Well, I read law with Lincoln. There were no law schools when I was there. But
thank you for that.
But when I was getting out, I wanted to work for the EPA. There were no jobs. It was a federal government hiring freeze. And so I had to think, who else might be looking for people to do environmental work? That's why I wound up going with a state agency, and not the state attorney general, not the state DNR. But I went with the state of Wisconsin Department of Transportation, which had a secretary very interested in environmental issues, using less salt that was polluting Wisconsin freshwater lakes, using fewer resources to mow highway rights of way, something that seems so obvious today, but was so contentious 30 plus years ago when federal DOT mandated that if you took the federal matching money on highways, you would mow everything down right away to right away. And we petitioned and argued that our state could have the ability to not be mowing all these. There was an oil embargo, labor was high, interest was high. Why are we mowing from Chicago to the Twin Cities all these highways? We're a prairie grass state. Let's grow prairie plants and make the state more beautiful. Now that's the law of the land. 35 years ago, very edgy. So federal government agencies, and I've listed a few here. EPA, this is DOJ, U.S. Attorney's Offices, Department of Energy, HUD. One of my law clerks 2 summers ago just started at HUD, All he's doing is environmental law. One of my law clerks from a number of years ago, she works, of all places, the U.S. Postal Service. Do they have lawyers?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Every federal agency has lawyers.
And why would the post office need environmental lawyers? Buried underground storage tanks. Buildings built to be fire-resistant and flame-retardant so that the mail and Social Security checks don't burn up. The building we're in, the EPA building, used to be a postal facility. It was carved out of a solid block of asbestos. You can't burn anything. We'll be there forever. But if you have asbestos, lead in the drinking water, if you have a motor vehicle fleet of a million cars, if you have buildings with exteriors that have to be clean, art metal, art deco, these old post offices, all those rags are hazardous waste. She's working, just doing environmental law for the post office. I know you're thinking, I could never tell my mother at Thanksgiving that I just accepted a job with the post office. How humiliating. What cachet is there with that? But these are good jobs, and there are plenty of them. The states, attorney general's offices, state DNRs, universities, EPA, my office, we have sued over 500 universities in the last 20 years. For what? Buried underground storage tanks, campus boilers that don't meet emissions requirements, improper use of disposal of hazardous waste. We have sued all these entities for all sorts. We even sued the Franklin Pierce Law School, which is in New Hampshire. Why, what possible environmental problem could a law school have? Well, they're up in New Hampshire. They own a lot of old buildings that they rent to the hapless law students for housing. You have a house, you rent a place, if it's pre-1978 or older, it's presumed to have lead paint, and you must give the renter, the law student, a notice that there could be lead paint in the building. They didn't do that. When it came down to trying to determine what the penalty should be, we looked at a year's tuition, and that's what the penalty was. How much fairer could that be? Local entities, school boards, park authorities, city health departments, many of these entities have to pay attention to environmental requirements. And for you first-year people, I mean, how many first-year people have I heard to, I can't get a job, I can't get anywhere with that, no one wants to hire me, all a third-year, second-year, better schools, better grade point. I mean, look, I know that 90% of you are in the bottom 90% of your class, even here at the University of Virginia. Even at Harvard and Yale, there's a lot of people at the bottom of the class. That's why they don't have class rankings. You know, we can't be, we in the hiring world, we're not fooled too easily. But you can go out if you're networking, if your grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle is on the school board, county commissioner, they may be looking for a first year student to do a survey of pesticide use for the county, for the school board, for the situation. So look for a way to make a job. Because, again, you're not working unless you're... Very good. This must be teacher's pet here. All right, very good. I'm glad you're paying attention. Now, private sector jobs, corporations, law firms, trade associations. Trade associations? You think every trade association in D.C. hasn't been paying attention to green technology, the opportunity to get some kind of... earmark in some legislation to promote green technology? You think trade associations aren't concerned about how cap and trade might affect their membership? Lots of opportunity with trade associations. And in the handout, I've listed a couple of examples of trade associations that I've worked with in the last year or so. The Chemical Specialty Manufacturers Association, BPA, chemicals, REACH in Europe, all these chemical issues, they're watching very closely, and they often hire entry-level law students who are lawyers who like to read and research stuff to do their technical work. The U.S. Conference of Mayors, always looking for something environmental up on Capitol Hill. one of our former law clerks who works for the conference. He put together a deal a couple of years ago where Congress appropriated a bunch of money to have trees planted in urban cities. Who benefits? The cities benefit. The people who grow trees benefit. So any elected official that has commercial nurseries benefit. The public benefits. And who doesn't want to be associated with planting trees in an urban area? And he put that deal together for the U.S. Conference of Mayors as part of an earmark during the budget process. The National Association of Refrigerated Food Warehouses. What in the world is going on there? We have sued members of that group more than 300 times. Now, what are we against refrigerator? Well, what possible environmental problems could they have other than buried underground storage tanks, lead in the drinking water? But something else, that thing you didn't know about, EPCRA? Yeah. The Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act. Do you have a course on that down here?
Yeah. Sort of.
The survey? Have you had it yet?
I'm in.
All right, but you haven't had it yet.
Yeah, we have.
You've had EPCRA. All right, so tell me, what do you know about it? How are you going to make a living with it, or are you just here for the academic?
I was going to make a living with it.
You?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, if I work for EPA, I can afford DOJ.
What if you worked for an NGO? What if you worked for an environmental justice community that wanted to use the toxic relief? What if you were working for the National Association of Refrigerator? What would you tell their membership about EPCRA?
I would tell them to try and get around reporting as much as they can.
Or if they have to use the chemicals like ammonia. I mean, we sued the Dove Bar Company. Ever hear of it? You know, those, not the soap, but the... What? Here's what they did. I was about to call them bastards, but I'm being recorded. Strike that. City of Burr Ridge, Illinois. Used to be a steel town, southern end of Chicago. They have this big vacant lot. Dove Bar comes along. Hey, we'd like to build a factory. Burr Ridge, another refinery or blast furnace. Ice cream. We'll go with the ice cream. They give them some deal so that they can have some tax write-offs. And here they come into town. Chocolate, ice cream, paper bags, wooden sticks, and boxes. What could possibly have driven the entire town out of their homes in the middle of the night? Big evacuation. What possible problem could they have had? And you took EPCRA, so I'm going to ask you, Mr. Smarty Pants. Ammonia. How many windows is Grandma cleaning at the plant?
It smells bad.
It's a commercial refrigerant. And a couple of guys having a little forklift rodeo, third shift, you know, middle of the night. Pipe gets pierced with the fork of the forklift. Ammonia is released. Ammonia will kill you in large quantities, and it's reportable under the Emergency Planning Community Right to Know aspect of that statute. Now, if you were working for the National Association of Refrigerator, you'd be saying to your membership, hey, listen, if you have employees riding forklifts around big pipes with ammonia, for God's sake, put some concrete blocks, steel girders, so you don't have an accident, police the facility. And if you do have a release, as Dove did, because Dove paid a fine of $75,000, not because of the release, accidents happen, they never phoned it in. The fire department notified. And under EPCRA, emergency planning, see how they just scratched the surface? Now, if you had me back to give a lecture, I'll tell you how to make a living with EPCRA. But they had to evacuate the town. And this is, again, how, if you're looking for a way to get your foot in the door, you have to know how many of these statutes have commercial or practical application for the membership. So you have trade associations. Going up from the bottom, law firms, specialty firms, general practice areas. Say you wind up at a strip mall someplace, law firm in town. Somebody's going to come into your office and say, you know, we bought a house. We had the home inspection. There's asbestos floor tile. There's radon. There is asbestos spray-on ceiling in the family room. These are environmental problems that can affect even the most routine, simple real estate transaction. And so knowing about that, going into these firms, if you have this specialized knowledge, very important. And finally, corporations. We have seven former lawyers from my office who work at Walmart as lawyers, not as greeters, not as shelf stockers, but they're working at Walmart. What are they doing? Well, they're making sure that new stores have skylights, that they're greening the company, that they're trying to incorporate some green practices in the stuff they buy and ship over from China. I have two former law clerks at Home Depot in Atlanta, and all they do is environmental stuff. One does green procurement of forest products. The other does hazardous waste management. Every time a customer knocks over a can of toluene, paint thinner, pesticides, and they have to clean it up, that's hazardous waste. Has to be stored, has to be shipped off within 90 days. And someone has to pay attention to that, because if they don't, the New York Times will be putting them on the front page of the paper. Home Depot, polluter worse than BP. Next slide. Now, some more points on your resumes. Don't raise questions. When you put your resume together, if I can't figure out what you're telling me, the Sophie Smith Scholarship, I don't know who she is. I don't know what the scholarship was for. Was it academic? Was it need-based? Spell it out. Let us know what you're doing. Be concise. Be letter perfect. Next. All right, again with the resumes, your name, school. What does your cell phone message say about you? If I called your cell phone right now, do you have some cutesy Darth Vader, hello? You know, you have to, you're entering a profession that's important. Next. Does it highlight your knowledge, skills, and abilities? You may never get a second chance to make a good first impression, so don't close off any opportunities. Come on up here and say something now.
Hi. I'm Kathy Broyko, Department of Justice, the Environment Natural Resources Division. I don't have prepared remarks today, but a couple things struck me when you were talking. One, on the networking.
Notice how DLJ grabbed the whole pizza for
And we have very good relations with client agencies, particularly the Environmental Protection Agency. That said, the networking struck me. I was in an airport recently and ran into a former colleague, friend for friend, from Department of Justice, different division. And I said, what are you doing now? Oh, I'm deputy general counsel at blah, blah, blah agency. And even though it was late in the evening, I was tired, I thought, wait a minute, my good buddy applied to his agency 9 months ago, didn't even get a phone call. I said, hey, are you guys hiring? He said, well, not right now, but we're going to soon. Nobody knows that, but we're going to soon. I said, oh, because my friend Susie Smith, let's call her, is very interested. He said, okay, email me with her resume. She called me last week and has an interview to talk to them. They're just getting around to advertising a spot. That does not mean she will get the job. But networking can lead to the interview, and you need the interview to get the job. So you never know where that's networking.
And of course, if the person lets you down,
right?
That's
a concern. And yeah. This is not only a friend but a former colleague, and I have a lot of faith in her abilities. And it was interesting because the follow-up email, he said, because I know you, Kathy, you wouldn't be recommending someone who couldn't do the job. So you should be careful when you're the other end of of networking.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it really is someone that you can recommend. But networking can lead to results, and particularly in today's economic climate. I know from what I've heard, our numbers in terms of lateral hiring, honors hiring, the number of resumes that come in, it's astounding. And it's hard to get out of the pile. Coming from an excellent law school helps to do that, but if you have that combined with knowing someone, it can help. The other thing, I did twice in the last few months, it was actually EPA headquarters attorney, Tahani Rivers, called me. We worked a case together, and she said she had two different law clerks who were also interested in Department of Justice. Would I talk to
Scott
them?
Scott Ness.
Yeah, yes. And you can't, even though I'm very busy every day, I remember, even though it was, good God, 25 years ago now, I graduated in 1986, 24 years from the law school. Unless I'm going to trial, you know, that week or deposition the next day, I'm going to take the time to talk to a law student because I remember what it was like. And you can gain all kinds of helpful information. With one of these students, we were sitting there in Starbucks talking, and I said, wait a minute, it sounds like you're really more interested in the environmental defense section. That's not what I do. I look up, there was an assistant chief in the environmental defense section. And I said, well, and he came over, introduced himself, chat, chat, chat. He goes, oh, if you want to talk to me, Kathy will give you my email. Just email me. So a lot of that, you end up just getting information as opposed to leading directly to a job, but you never know where that information might lead you. It might lead you, as you're talking, say you sit down and talk to me, think, boy, her job really sounds awful. Don't tell me that. But use that information. And one of the questions I got this morning was, how is my job at DOJ different from the EPA job? What types of skills, what day-to-day tasks do you have? What skills do you think are most important for your job? And then you can say to yourself, either I do or don't have those skills, or I have some of those skills, and that job really interests me. How could I maybe gain the other skills? Or does the description of the necessary skills lead you to believe the job is not for you? I have found that the people who are successful in my office, two-thirds or three-quarters of them naturally had most, if not all, of the skills necessary. But even among those who are very successful, they might not have had all of those skills. But they took the opportunity, took the risk to get there.
Oh. Keep going.
Don't
come to, clothes and your hair do make a difference, right?
Even in government work, that's true. Though the cut of your suit, as long as you've got one on or properly dressed, if it's not
and
the most expensive
that picture
one,
I just
okay.
showed you, did y'all know who that was?
Phil Spector.
Yeah, Phil Spector. He's in court dressed like that, charged with murder.
So,
no jacket? No jacket?
Did he get off?
No, he was convicted. Next.
The other thing I would say about interviewing, what I would not be afraid to say to someone who's in public service, why you really want to be in public service, and not worry about sounding corny, because that person is in public service and has made that decision. What people ask me, you know, why do you do what you do? Well, protecting the environment is important to me. I want to be of service to the public. I want to help make it a better world for those who come next. I wouldn't be afraid to say that. Though in my interview for my job 19 and a half years ago when I interviewed, I was asked, why do you want to come to the Environment Division? I said, I'm in it for the money.
Hey, and there is money to be made, because I'll tell you, I've been paid over $1 million by the EPA. Now, I've been there almost 40 years, but that's another story.
Well.
All right, so the bottom line, just very quickly, and it's on your handout, too. Cut it out and look at it. Put it on your bathroom mirror. Look at it every day. Get clinical, practical, or internship experience. Clinical, practical, or internship experience. Use these experiences to network. You're not, who put all these typos in? That's your fault. You're not working, prepare a decent but short writing sample. Look, there's more typos. Make finding a job your job, never give up. If you want to be even a good environmental lawyer, you have to be a great lawyer first and foremost. And that means evidence, civil procedure, criminal procedure, contracts, all those things that make a big difference. Thank you again.